Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Enjoy yourselves. Give us a call if you like, or a text at 312-981-7200. Hello, Wendy.
That's a nice little welcome for everyone.
Well, I want people to feel welcome. I'm putting the proverbial welcome mat out.
All right.
Just all I ask is that you wipe your feet when you come into the studio. That's all I ask.
The things you ask people
well,
to do.
It's not too much. Can I carry over? There was a conversation that only happened for a minute with Steve on Steve's show, and I would love to get your opinion. The talk centered around, if somebody was to lose weight, would you compliment that person or not?
Yes.
I would, too.
You'd have to be super sure
that they lost weight?
Yeah.
Well, here's the one bad thing. First of all, it's different with women. Because if, first of all, you wouldn't say, are you pregnant? Because you've learned. That's the first thing I taught my boys.
I have congratulated women for having for being pregnant who were not pregnant.
This isn't a joke.
It won't happen a third time. I know it.
It's for real.
Until I see a baby coming out, I don't say anything.
That's one of the first rules I taught my boys. Don't ever ask if someone's pregnant.
Right.
The other thing is, if you say, oh, wow, have you lost weight?
Yep.
And then their answer is, yes, I have cancer.
Oh.
And that could happen. So maybe you should just say, you look great today.
Oh. There's a guy that I see at the health club by me. He works out at almost the same times and days that I do. And I've seen him for about a year and a half. And in the last couple months, I'd say he's dropped about 60 pounds.
Wow.
And I want to say, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but keep it up. You look great. But then there's always that variable of maybe he didn't want to lose 60 pounds, so I say nothing.
Well, if he's at a gym, I would assume, yes, he does.
I think that, too. But I'm still nervous to do it. It's still, I've never talked to the guy, so it'd be weird. Right. Hey, I'm just a fan.
You just entered my league.
Right. Or it would sound weird. I've been watching you work out
right.
for the last
there's no,
6 months.
There's no way to preface
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But to carry on the conversation on Steve's show, let's say you work with somebody and it's obvious they have lost some weight. Is it okay to say? Because I always think, boy, that's a compliment. And if you've worked hard to lose that weight, it just says I'm obviously succeeding.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Bill, I got to tell you, I am scared to say anything anymore to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I really am.
No, I understand that.
And it's terrible that it's come
it.
To that.
I get it. Is it different when it's a man and when it's a woman?
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? It shouldn't be.
I know.
But it is.
Me Too's got everybody freaked out.
Well,
my eyes are up
here. Kind of rightfully so.
Yes.
Right?
To an extent. You know, when there's a problem, I feel like we push back the other way too hard sometimes.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation with one of my daughters. Kylie is in from school for 2 weeks, essentially, just shy of 2 weeks. So we were talking about the Aziz Ansari special that you and I talked about a month or 6 weeks ago. And I really enjoyed it. And I was going to defend the fact that he seemed remorseful. He never said the words, I apologize or I'm sorry.
He said, I'm sorry she felt that
way. That's the way he worded it, right? And my daughter was very upset that I was not so much on his side, but she was perceiving it that I was defending him because I did see some remorse. It bothered me that he didn't say I'm sorry or the way it was worded. But she said, she started to watch it, and she said, I just had to turn it off because we're glorifying this guy for doing something horrible.
Can I just say we don't know 100% what happened? We really don't.
I know.
And this wasn't an allegation of assault, right? This was just
a date that he was pushing a little too hard.
Yeah. His side of the story is he thought it was mutual consent. Her side of the story was that it was not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I misunderstood. I misremembered it then. Right.
He kind of vanished for almost a year. Not completely vanished, but he laid very low for about a year. And I even said when I was watching it, it was hard to root for the guy, because it was. It was very, very hard for me to root for the guy, because I don't know exactly what happened. But I thought this was a step in the right direction, because unlike Louis C.K., he addressed it.
Right away.
He talked about it. Well, right away, and then a couple times during his special.
About how it changed him.
Yeah.
And but that shows growth.
It shows growth, but at the same time, while I was watching that, I was thinking, I'm sure it changed the girl, too. she doesn't have a special to work it out in front of, you know. But it was an eye opener for me, because I appreciate the fact that I was getting a different viewpoint from somebody that I trust and care about, saying, I tried to watch that same thing you watched and I just couldn't stomach it.
Yeah.
You know,
I just don't know the actual facts of what happened. And, you know, there have been dates in the past before the Me Too generation where it went kind of wrong.
Right.
You know, maybe you were given mixed signals and it was like, whoa, 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 no, stop. No means no. And I believe that 100%. No means no. I also believe that people try and figure out what's going on. You shouldn't be a pig. Again, I don't know exactly what happened.
Right. So are we to believe that the instances where things like what you just described have, and this has been happening for generations,
yes,
and generations, so are we now to believe that because of the movement, maybe, hopefully, they're happening less? That's what I keep hoping. Right?
You know, there's that stupid movie that Seth Rogen's behind with those little kids. Is it called Good Boys?
Yes.
In the
it's
trailer.
Supposed to be very good.
Yeah. I know. I kind of want to see it.
It's the number one movie at the box office.
I know.
But you called it a stupid movie.
Well, it's kind of...
Oh, I get you. Okay.
Stupid. And it's like, I saw the trailer and I can't believe what those kids have to say and do. And there's adult themes. And there was a funny little bit of Seth Rogen talking to the actors who played in the movie and said, you can't see this movie. Well, we acted in it. Yeah, but you can't. You didn't know a lot of the stuff. You can't see it.
Right.
And there's this one point where, you know, it's young boys trying to have their first kiss and they get a Recessa Annie doll. And as they're practicing kissing, mm-hmm, one of the kids goes, you have to ask for consent. So, yes, things have changed.
Yeah.
For the better.
Hopefully, yes.
I hope. Yeah. Yes. I guess hopefully.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a short break. We'll come back. We have much more to discuss with you. Stick around. Oh, Eric Zorn, by the way. You know, it's Monday, so Eric Zorn will be by later on. So listen in for that as well.
Take a load off, planet. All right, we were talking about if you lose weight, should someone say something?
We've all had instances where maybe you know somebody, maybe it's a neighbor, maybe you work with somebody, and it's obvious they've lost some weight, so you would think it'd be okay to say, hey, you look great. You lost some weight, huh? But maybe not.
There are a couple of texts that really have changed my mind. 608, I recently lost some weight, and I kind of hated it when people would tell me I lost weight because it made me feel like I had to lose the weight to look good or be pretty. I was pretty before. I lost the weight, too. No wonder people have image issues.
What do you mean? Yeah, Steve, explain the
I think you have to assume the goodwill of other people. And if someone's saying that to you, they're extending goodwill to you. They're trying to...
No one's being malicious.
You know,
saying that.
And if you're going to take it as a slam, then that's not the other person's fault. They're trying to give you a compliment.
But why, maybe this person wasn't complimented before and she felt pretty before. Why didn't you say anything before? I had to lose weight for you to notice I'm pretty? Again, it's a kind of a stickler.
But did it say you were pretty? Did she say you're pretty or you've lost weight?
I recently lost some weight. Kind of hated it when people would tell me I lost weight because it made me feel like I had to lose the weight.
Okay, but they didn't say she wasn't pretty before. They said, hey, you've lost some weight. You look good.
Maybe prettier, maybe. Maybe they were pretty, but now they look better, maybe.
Maybe they don't.
Maybe they don't. Right, but you can't say that. It looks like you've lost some weight, and you're not as attractive as you used to.
I missed that third chin. It was my favorite chin of yours.
All right.
Don't you think,
Donald
though,
Trump Jr.?
I know everybody's story is different. I understand that, and there's people who want to be complimented, and there's people that aren't. But don't you think that for somebody who's had a struggle losing any kind of weight, and they've said to themselves, this is it, I'm really going to buckle down, I'm going to lose some weight, I'm going to work out, I'm going to eat better, just throwing the compliment their way is kind of a way of saying what you're doing is good, don't you think? Or
I mean, by that standard...
Well, it's good for them.
But by that standard, you could never offer a compliment. You could never say, you look great in... I love those shoes. Well, what? You didn't like my other shoes?
Right.
Or,
right.
I love that hat. You look great in that hat. Oh, I don't look great when I don't wear a hat?
Steve and Bill, you guys have never had weight issues. My weight has fluctuated so many millions of times. It's just kind of a sticky situation sometimes.
I will disagree with you. There are about 10 years ago or so, I lost about 15 pounds, 20 pounds, and people would come up to me and it made me feel good. Yeah, well, you've really lost a lot of weight.
But with what you just said, Wendy, where you said you've struggled with it for years, when somebody says to you, hey, it looks like you've lost some weight. You're looking good. You that doesn't offend you, does it?
But I could see where
with other people, with maybe.
Maybe some people. Here's another one, 708. I complimented an old classmate on her significant weight loss. She went on to tell me about her eating disorder and that she had still struggled and never compliment anyone on anything ever.
Mm.
And see, that's the terrible thing now, is you don't know someone else's backstory.
Right.
And you're just trying to be nice and right. go, oh my God, you look great.
Yeah.
Just keep being nice.
Can you leave it vague? Can you say, you look fantastic? I don't know what's going on. What are you doing?
Because yeah, that might be a good way to do it.
It puts the ball in their court to either say they lost weight or they bought a new brooch.
That's what 630 says. Maybe just say that person looks great.
Yeah, and leave
and
it at that.
And let them kind of right. go, oh, thank you. I've just dropped 30 pounds.
Right.
And, Bertrand.
Do it like a Mad Libs.
You didn't have probably more than 15 to lose, but there are people that have lost, like, you know, 80 or 100 pounds, and then it's definitely noticeable.
So how can you not address that? If you know somebody who's lost 100 pounds, you almost have to address it, don't you? You can't pretend like you don't notice that.
Consider a different scenario, Wendy, where someone's lost 80 pounds, and they're walking around saying, damn, I lost 80 pounds,
no one's
saying a word to me.
I know. I just kind of like the, you look good.
And just stop it right there.
And then they can either say, thank you, I just got my eyebrows waxed.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Didn't you lose 100 pounds? Yes, but my eyebrows were very
bushy.
Heavy, very Brezhnev-y.
But if you're a guy talking to a woman, you're safer saying, have you lost weight? Then you look great. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, then why won't you say it to the guy you work out with?
I can't.
He doesn't know him.
I don't know him. It's like a weird thing to just come up to a guy. Hi, we've been here for a year, and I keep meaning to say something to you, but now I just can't help it. You look fantastic.
We've not known each other for 6 months.
Right.
All right, Tina wants to talk about this. Tina, what do you think?
Well, so I kind of have a different perspective. So when in my 30s and 40s, I actually held a pretty decent weight for those two decades. Now I'm older, I put on some pounds, whatever. And I was like 5'7". I usually was in the like 150, 152. And numerous times, people that I, you know, maybe hadn't seen for a few months or whatever, we'd get together and they'd say, wow, you look really great. Have you lost weight? Where I hadn't lost any weight, I've been the same size this whole time. And that would make me feel like, geez, is there like brain memory of me of somebody that's way fatter and that every time they see me, they're shocked because I look skinnier?
Tina, are you able to say that to them, or is it best not to say that?
For me to say something back to them, like, do you think I'm fat?
Well, it depends
on the person. Like, you know, if it was somebody I was super close to for years, I'd be like, what's the problem? Am I a fat person in your brain? I don't know.
Yeah.
But if it's somebody that's sort of more of an acquaintance, no, I wouldn't say anything back. But it was really weird for me. You know, why is it that some people, you know, I wasn't super skinny. I wasn't heavy. You know,
sure.
I was just sort of average.
Yeah.
But somehow in their brains, their recollection of my physical being was heavier to the point where when they would see me, they'd be like, wow, she looks thinner, you know?
I wonder what's causing that. That's very strange. I think it's strange.
Unfortunately, I've not had that for the last 5 years. Oh. I'm blowing up like a blimp.
Oh.
It's called menopause.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah. Tina, thank you.
All right, Tina.
Appreciate it.
Somebody says, here's an example of what not to say. Over the weekend, I ran into a cousin who I hadn't seen in a while. She greeted me with, oh, you're not skinny anymore. What are you eating?
Oh.
And then after a hesitation, she tried to recover by saying, oh, you look great. I don't think
good rebound.
If you notice somebody and you want to say something, I don't know that we should be afraid to say something, but know that the response may not be what you're expecting.
Right. But wasn't there a time where you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to throw a compliment somebody's way. How in the world could this come back to bite me? But sometimes it does.
You're
right?
saying? It's not, you didn't coin it, but you use it a lot. No good deed. It
goes unpunished. It's true. It's very true.
A lot of people are saying, you know, yes, tell them. give the compliment.
Give the compliment, yeah.
Another one, you know, we have become afraid to say anything anymore. No wonder we're so antisocial. What about the reverse? If somebody who had lost weight gains it back, which that happens, do you bring that up?
No.
Hey.
Right.
You used to be skinny.
Right. See, you're wearing bulky sweaters again.
Right. Right. No, there's no way to come out on top of that.
All right, Joe has a comment. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I have a chronic illness, and so I struggle with weight loss. And so people say, hey, you lost a bunch of weight. And it's like, well, hey, thanks for letting me know that, reminding me that I have a chronic illness. I can't control it.
But doesn't part of you recognize that they're trying to offer you a compliment?
No, because the very first place my mind goes to is, you've just reminded me that I can't control my health like this. You know, it's a part of me. It's who I am. So if I'm feeling especially ornery that day, then I can sit there and say, well, looks like whatever I lost, you found, you know? So...
Wow. Well, I like the texts that I get, you know, oh, it looks like you've gained weight. I have a mirror, and I haven't. I mean, that is kind of the thing. We have a mirror. Right, Joe?
Yeah, anybody that is overweight or they're underweight, you know, they're painfully aware of where they stand with their weight. They know it 100%. You don't have to remind them.
Sure. That makes sense.
All right, well, take care of yourself, Joe. We're thinking about you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
847 says, just compliment an article of clothing they are wearing. I love those jeans in three sizes smaller.
That's well done. Very well done. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then there's more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. This was a rough weekend with celebrity deaths. We had several from all walks of what was life and is now death. Can't say walks of life. I'm talking about death.
Oh, you could hear the light bulb go on there.
Click, click. On Friday, we learned that Peter Fonda had passed away. Very, very sad news.
Lung cancer.
Yeah.
79 years old.
Yep.
He had an interesting life.
Boy, didn't he?
Yes.
He really did. And in any of the obituaries I read about Peter Fonda, they didn't pull any punches about his relationship, his very, very rocky relationship with his dad, Henry Fonda. They just, I'm sure at some point they got along and agreed on something, but not very often.
I just was watching that Drunk History, and there was an episode with him in it that was filmed about a year or so ago, and he really looked really good.
He
didn't
look
sick or anything.
Right.
Again, this was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Easy Rider was... such a good movie. That was not one of his favorites, I read.
You know, here's
Yulee's Gold was his favorite.
Yeah, that was such a good movie and gets overlooked, I think.
It was a really good movie.
He got nominated for Best Actor for that, and he hadn't really been in a significant movie in about 25 or 30 years when he made Yulee's Gold. It's so funny because American Graffiti was such a landmark film, an important film, and most of his work that followed didn't come close to it, you know? He didn't burst on the scene with that movie. He had made a couple of smaller films before he got to that. But all of a sudden, people are going, well, now he's going to be a force in cinema for generations. And even though he worked fairly steadily, nothing stood out, you know? There was a bunch of movies that were okay at best.
He helped with a lyric in She Said from the Beatles. They were dropping acid, the Beatles and Fonda, who later said he was high on LSD when he arrived to this party. And he said he tried to calm down guitarist George Harrison, who thought he was dying. Here's what Peter Fonda said. I told him there was nothing to be afraid of and that all he needed to do was relax, Fonda said. I said that I knew what it was like to be dead because when I was 10 years old, I'd accidentally shot myself in the stomach and my heart stopped beating three times while I was on the operating table because I'd lost so much blood. Fonda said John Lennon overheard him say, I know what it's like to be dead, and used that lyric. He looked at me and said, you're making me feel like I've never been born. Who put all that crap in your head, Fonda recalled. Lennon later said that Fonda kept coming up to him and repeating the line.
It's interesting that in the song version, it's she said, I know what it's like to be dead, instead of Peter Fonda said, I know what it's like to be dead. It would have taken a lot longer to do the song. It wouldn't have been as, I don't think the song would have been as big of a hit if they kept Peter Fonda's name in instead of she.
I don't know. Dropping names might have helped.
Maybe. Right.
And then Cedric Benson, I
that
saw,
was
died.
So sad.
36 years old, motorcycle accident.
So sad.
Peanut Tillman wrote up a nice little thing about him,
oh,
a little
I didn't
tribute
read.
To him on
Did
Facebook.
He?
Just saying he was this great standout star in Texas.
Yep.
And he was a great guy. He went on to Cincinnati and somewhere else.
He played for four teams during his career. Just such a standout football player from everything I read. A very decent guy. That was a shocker. And he was young, right? Was he in his 30s?
36.
Wow.
Motorcycle accident.
And then the other one that bears some mention is a guy who really, when you hear me say his name, you probably go, oh, that's the first time I've heard anyone say his name in a long, long time. Kip Adada, who was an important comic in the 70s, a Tonight Show, not so much a regular. He wasn't on very often, but he was on from time to time. But Kip Adada was a comedian for years and years and years. He had written a book about the world of stand-up comedy. And that was kind of a shocker. That's
I didn't hear of that one.
Oh, you didn't, Steve?
Yeah, and I think it happened a little while back, but it...
They just reported on it over the weekend.
Yeah, it was his family. It was his Facebook page, and he said, this is the family of Kip Adada.
He's one of those guys, when they talk about stand-up comics who go into comedy to mask the parts of their life that aren't very savory. Like, he really had a very difficult life, you know? His parents splitting up when he was very young. He was put in an orphanage by his dad.
I didn't know any of this.
It's a horrible story.
Now, all I know from him was the Fish song, right?
Downtown Atlantis. Yeah, he had a couple of these type of novelty songs.
Dr. Demento, that's why I knew him.
Oh, really? From Dr. Demento?
Yeah.
They said I'd blown a seal. I said, fix the damn thing and leave my private life out of it, okay, pal?
I think he was the oldest guy ever named Kip. I think you'd be hard pressed to find an older gentleman anywhere on the planet named Kip than Kip Adada.
Now I'm gonna rack my brain.
Kip seems to me like such a name from the 70s, but he was already in his 30s in the 70s. So his parents must have just been, you know, incredible at predicting the future. But it seems like guys named Kip only existed to me anyway in the 70s.
Yeah, Kip Winger.
Yeah, I guess Kip Winger.
He's the only other
musician.
Kip, yeah,
yeah,
of Winger.
Yeah,
oddly enough.
Yeah,
somebody. I thought you said American Graffiti. Somebody said, "Why did Bill say American Graffiti when you meant to say Easy Rider?"
Did I say American Graffiti?
I thought you did, and I'm not going to correct him. But yeah, I knew
it's Easy Rider.
Easy Rider.
Right.
Was he in American Graffiti?
Nope.
Peter Fonda.
I don't even think he saw it.
Kip Adada.
Kip Adada was in it. Yeah, he played the girl with the blonde hair. All right, we'll take. Remember that
Candy
scene?
Clark?
Yeah, no, Suzanne Summers, actually.
Oh, yes, you're
that
right.
That was Suzanne Summers.
Right.
All right, we'll take a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on American Graffiti.
Changing the world.
Yes.
That's what he does.
One crawl space at a time.
Amen, bro.
Yes.
All right, Kip Adada, Rockford Zone. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he was from. I totally did, too. Yeah.
We forgot to mention Kip from Bosom Buddies.
Oh, the character of Kip on Bosom Buddies,
that doesn't
right?
Count.
Right.
Mm. And then there's Kip Moore, who's a country singer.
I don't know his work.
Kip Gamblin.
Who's Kip Gamblin?
He's a soap opera actor. You think that's his real name?
I'm positive it is. Kip Gamblin?
Yeah.
Spelled
Gamblin, like gambling with no G at the end.
You sure it's not Chip Gamblin?
That would make
no,
more
that
sense.
Would be better.
That would be perfect.
Kip Pardue.
Oh, the actor.
Oh, yeah.
I know him.
I'm looking at his face. I don't know
you
him.
Don't
he's in trouble.
Him?
I think he's had some trouble lately.
Oh.
Kip Wells, baseball player.
Yep.
Cardinals.
Yep. So Kips are not a dying breed. We still have some Kips. Not as many, but I bet we lead the world in Kips. I bet if you went to other parts of the world, they wouldn't have any. Or few and far between, anyway.
My assistant principal in junior high was named Kip. His real name was Keith.
Oh.
But they called him Kip. These are just full-blown Kips, I think.
Yes, they are.
And we got 20 texts for Kip Winger, so people are still trying to keep him alive.
From the world of music. Yes, absolutely. An interesting week for baseball, Wendy, on several fronts. Number one, the White Sox did something that I love. I wish they would do this all the time.
It was fun.
Steve Stone was not in on the trip for some reason to Anaheim as the White Sox played the Angels. So each night on TV, Jason Benetti had another guest star filling in for Steve Stone. All of them interesting.
I only saw the Bill Walton, and they talked about weed a lot.
He was Friday.
Oh, Fry.
Right. Why? What brought up marijuana during a...
He's a big deadhead.
Yeah,
and
I
he
knew
likes
that.
To smoke weed, and he talked about being high, and they he and Jason had the tie-dyed shirts on, and it was trending big time on social media, and he was pretty funny. It was pretty funny.
I don't remember ever seeing that be the topic of discussion during a baseball game. So,
well, Jason was ready for it. He did his homework because
he knew it was coming.
Yeah, because it was there were some uncomfortably good moments,
yeah.
But it's a tough job for Jason to be working with these people.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, with no
somebody
practice
knew.
Or
right.
anything. But
right.
he did a great job
on Saturday. Michael Schur, who is an actor and a writer and a TV creator. I think most people would know him as Moe's. That's Dwight Schrute's cousin on episodes of The Office. I think he's hysterical. He's
oh,
really
God.
Very funny. He, you know, the show The Good Place, that was his brainchild. He came up with that.
Was it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's more of a writer than an actor?
He's primarily a writer. But,
I love that Moe's character.
Yeah,
man.
He's very, very funny. And then Mike O'Brien, a Chicagoan who was on Saturday Night Live for a bit, was on yesterday. I didn't get to see yesterday.
I didn't see yesterday's.
And I'm sorry I missed it, because he's very funny as well. So that was interesting that the White Sox did that. I found out something during a Cubs game that I didn't know. Every time you think you know enough about something, you learn something. So there was an instance during the game the other day where the Pirates hitter and the umpire had the same last name. They were not related, but they had the same last name. And then they wondered if they were related, and then they remembered they can't be related because a couple of years ago, the Phillies had a pitcher named Randy Wolf, whose brother was a major league umpire, and it was a rule that his brother could not umpire behind the plate while Randy was pitching.
That makes total sense.
Isn't that crazy, though, that they'd have to develop a rule for that? It does, because he might show some favoritism.
So, but he can work on the bases?
He could, yeah. He could be an umpire at first, second, or third base, just not behind home plate while his brother was pitching.
So I'd appeal every check swing.
Right. Just not let it go. The other thing about baseball that was great this weekend is it was the Little League World Series. Did you get to see any of this at all?
I don't really watch this. It's a sweet thing, and
it's
I probably
so much
should.
Fun to watch. And this year there was a girl who pitched for one of the teams who was... She lost the game... But she was really, really good, and it doesn't happen very often. There are girls on some of the teams, but not often in the pitching position. She was really good. And then the Cubs and the Pirates played their game last night in the Little League Stadium.
No, they did not.
They did. They absolutely did.
What a cool thing.
This is the third year in a row. It hasn't been the Cubs in the past. It was the Cubs last night because it's usually Pittsburgh because they're the closest to the Little League Stadium. So it was so much fun. It's similar to what the White Sox are going to do next year with the Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
Where it's such a little field, but there's a major league game going on.
All right. Well, that's really cool. It's all these new little twists that are happening in sports. I like it.
Yeah. It was fun to watch because most of the audience was comprised of the little leaguers themselves watching the game. And then because the Cubs won after the game, the manager, Joe Maddon, took them to A&W. Took the whole team.
Oh, I forgot about those trips. Those were great.
Yeah. But,
and then they all shook hands after the game,
yes,
right?
Yes, they did.
And wasn't Maddon and the manager of the Pirates, I've lost his name.
Clint Hurdle.
Weren't they in kind of a little kerfuffle earlier this season?
Yeah, there had been a little bit of friction earlier. But everybody connected with the game yesterday said it made the guys realize, the players, that they're really very fortunate to be playing a kid's game. They spent the whole day, it's really interesting, yesterday... players always have their routines of what they do on game day, but all that went out the window yesterday. They just hung out with all these little leaguers all day long. They showed footage of Anthony Rizzo going down a hill on a cardboard slide.
Oh.
It was really fun to watch.
I saw Kyle Schwarber with some of the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you're making this up, but what a sweet little thing.
Oh, yeah. It was great to watch all day yesterday.
Oh, I wish I would have known.
Yeah, it was fun. All right, we will take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot ahead. Eric Zorn of the Tribune joins us in about a half an hour. Stick around for that.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's sitting pretty in the Northwestern Medicine newsroom.
Wendy, there's a call. Rob wants to clarify something about yesterday's contest between the Cubs and the Pirates. Hey, Rob, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going? You guys are awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. So are you.
I've talked to you a couple times before, so... actually, I had two things. The referee thing, I actually am a basketball referee on the side, and we are allowed to block a certain school from the web-based system that we get scheduled from.
Yeah.
So if our kids attend a school, even though my kids didn't play basketball, I still blocked that school because I didn't want to seem, because I knew all the parents and stuff like that, I didn't want to seem impartial. So now that they're all graduated, I can do games at that school now.
Oh.
So that's on that part.
Yeah.
And the Cubs, yeah, they didn't play in the Little League stadium. They played near it. They played at the AAA affiliate for the Phillies, I think it is. So it had the regular dimensions of a Major League park. I saw 325 down the line and 411 to center.
Ah.
Yeah, because isn't the Little League field a little smaller?
It's like 200 and something feet
out. It is. Well,
the
AAA, it was 2,500 people, yeah. So it was really cool, though. They had all 16 World Series teams there for the kids playing, and kids were having a great time. It was really cool.
Not only were the kids having a great time, the players kept going over and interacting with the kids all throughout the game. It was really fun
to
watch.
It brought them back to their childhood,
yeah,
I'm sure.
No question about it.
Yeah, we're all kids at heart, right?
So. And Bill still is.
Yep.
So thank you, Rob. We appreciate it.
I'm right with you there, Bill. I love you guys.
Good. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I was over at lithub.com because I'm a literary genius.
Yep.
And there is a guy who wrote an article. I believe he works for the BBC, Giles Brandreth. And he was getting bothered by a lot of the English terms that broadcasters used here in America.
Oh, he was.
In the United States of America.
Oh.
And so he had listeners send in, these are real Americanisms that British people really can't stand that we say.
It's funny because it's the same language that they speak and we speak, and yet there are so many differences.
We don't speak the Queen's English.
We sure don't. We do not. We do not speak the Queen's
English.
We're
much more crass.
Yep. By design.
Yeah, I guess. These are some of the Americanisms that the British public really and truly cannot stand that we say.
Mm.
When people ask for something, I often hear, "Can I get a
sure
cafe mocha?"
Yeah.
It infuriates me. It's not New York, it's not the 90s, you're not in Central Perk with the rest of the friends.
Oh.
They, I bet, would say, "May I please have..."
Right. Right. It's much more proper.
I'm with them on that, though. That, can I get a... just isn't very...
But you know what's more disturbing than that is when people are ordering in a restaurant and they say, "I'll have the chicken sandwich, I'll have the..."
What does that matter?
Because it implies there's only one. And there's not one. It's unlimited.
So you would say... So you're not saying the or the, you're saying...
"I'll have a..."
"I'll have a chicken sandwich."
Yeah.
"I'll have
not the chicken sandwich." It's not, they don't only have one chicken sandwich in the back.
Listen, I know that you go out to eat with Dave Ennett a lot and sometimes Bertrand and never me.
Yeah.
I'm happy about that. I mean, judge people. I know.
We're all happy about it. Everyone wins in that scenario.
No, Dave Ennett and Karen and I are making plans without you.
Oh, you are?
That's why I always order before Bill, because I was going to have the chicken sandwich.
Right.
I never even noticed anybody ever, like, I never.
Well, so you're juicing it up to make people believe there's only one back there, but there's not. There's a bunch back there. I've
My
been
God.
Back there.
I hope so badly one time someone right before you orders the chicken sandwich, and when you go to order it, they'll say, "That
Sorry.
Was our last one.
The chicken sandwich is off the market.
We have a nice turkey."
Right.
My God, I don't even judge or listen when other people order.
Oh, you should listen in.
I guess I'm missing a
lot. Yeah,
you teach me.
Yep.
The next time someone tells you something is the least worst option, tell them that their most best option is learning grammar. I've never heard least worst option.
It doesn't happen a lot, but every once in a while someone will use that phrase, but it's a double negative, kind of. I mean, you're canceling one out with the other.
I say worst case scenario. Is that the
yeah,
same
that
kind
one's,
of thing?
Yeah, that's better worded, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
I've never said my least worst option ever. Here's another one. These are Americanisms that really bother the British public. They've sent these in.
They're furious. The Brits are furious.
The phrase I've watched seep into the language, especially with broadcasters, is two-time and three-time. Have the words double, triple, etc. totally been lost?
So that would be used, I'm guessing, if somebody say he's a two-time Cy Young Award winner.
Yes.
He's a three-time Oscar winner.
Right. Instead of a
double or triple.
We don't speak like that. We don't.
I think you could do both. You could do either or.
But I've never heard it. Like,
no?
He's a double winner of. We don't say that here in America.
I don't think we do.
They can't stand when we Americans say 24/7.
I can't either. It's ridiculous. I never say it. Sometimes I'm forced to say it in a commercial read, and I feel dirty saying
it. Why?
It's ridiculous. Just say always.
Well, they're okay with saying 24 hours, 7 days a week.
That takes forever.
Right. So that's why we've shortened it to 24/7,
right.
365.
Yeah. Do you feel good when you say that?
I don't feel anything.
It's like you're trying to save time for what? Just say always.
All right.
Or constant. Forever.
No wonder you wanted to talk about these. You have a lot of opinions.
Well, I'm British, Wendy. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I'm British.
I
just don't use the accent.
This I understand. This is written. This is what Americans say. Deplane.
Deplane.
No.
Deplane.
Which means to disembark an aircraft. It's used in the phrase, you'll be able to deplane momentarily.
Yes.
I don't fly that much. I'm getting better at it now. I'm not that afraid, and I'm getting more used to it. But I always thought that was a weird thing to say. Like, when we land, you know, people who are connecting or getting a connecting flight will deplane first.
Yep.
How about disembark or get off?
Well, that's up to you. I think any of those are acceptable. But deplane just sounds, because of my love of all things Hervé Velichez, I can't hear it without thinking of him.
Yeah. I don't like that word.
I don't like that. I think I've told you this before. An escalator. Escalate means to go up.
Yeah.
And elevate also means to go up. So sometimes they're de-escalators or de-elevators. Really.
Right. But
you're not always going up on an elevator or on an escalator.
But I think, you know, the first one they built was the one to go up.
Yeah.
Because coming down is a little easier.
A descender is just more accurate than an escalator. Because an escalator should only go up. But then you'd have people trapped at the top of every building.
Right. And there are places I've seen that only have an escalator, and then the stairs going down are stairs.
Oh. But when referring commonly to an escalator that goes down, we still say escalator.
Because it's the same thing. It's just going a different direction, and they can change direction, and then that would be an escalator.
Mm.
So if you said go to the de-escalator and turn left, what if they switched it? You'd be completely...
Maybe. I'd be willing to take that risk.
I don't like the word nitpicky, which is what you are. I love that you're bothered by a lot of these.
Well, we could do better.
All right,
I mean,
how about this one?
We could do better.
Here, 24/7 does not bother me.
Oh,
I don't use it, but it doesn't bother me if I hear it. I don't like this. Touch base.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Before our headshots today, let's touch base in the hallway. No.
It's an attempt to sound too cool for the room.
Yeah, how about I'll meet you in the hallway?
That's fine. I'd be good with that.
Touch base.
Right.
Is physicality a real word? Physicality?
I think it is. Does it say no?
They're not giving actual definitions or anything. They're just saying these are words that Americans say that...
the Brits are not happy about.
Physicality is a word. It's a noun, the fact of relating to the body as opposed to the mind. Physical presence, involvement of a lot of bodily contact or activity.
So are British people saying that we use that word incorrectly or
too
often?
No, they say they don't like it.
They just don't like it. All right.
Transportation. What's wrong with transport? Because you're British and we're not.
Basically, yes.
Who's going to transport you to work today, Bill?
Well, they never say the hospital. Like, if you're sick, we take you to the hospital. But in Great Britain, it's just hospital.
That's weird.
And then he's going on holiday.
Right.
Instead of on
vacation.
A vacation, it's on holiday.
Well, I would say on vacation.
Yeah, right.
But holiday sounds weird and hospital's very weird.
Yeah. Why don't you say the hospital? Paddington Bear.
This is something Boy, I hear this all the time. Somebody will say, hey, do you want me to carry that for you? No, I'm good.
Yeah.
It's technically I'm well.
Oh, I've never heard anyone in the States say I'm well because it sounds too classy for us. I'm good.
You know who, honestly, this is going to make you laugh. Because
who?
The only person who like made a point to say it, like you'd go, hey, how's it going? And he would always go, I'm well.
Oh, who's that?
Danny Bonaducci.
Really?
I swear to God.
I'm surprised to hear that.
I wouldn't expect him to be
the proper
Englishman.
And yet he is.
Yes.
Well, that's a surprise.
Because, yeah, you wouldn't say, I'm good.
I'm going to try to say that next time.
I'm well,
and see if
thank
I can
you.
Pull that off. I don't think I can. Like, you know, I can't pull off the word indeed. Right?
He looks saying that.
I've tried it 3 or 4 times, and anyone I'm saying it to, they'll go, wait, what? Like that. Because it's too bookish for me, indeed.
Yeah, I'd never say that either.
But don't you know people that can say it and
honestly,
get away with
no.
it? Really? I've heard people
Maybe
say
Bertrand.
It, and I go, yeah, Steve could get away with it every day if he wanted to.
But
I know I can't.
I don't hear anybody, like, here with ever use
in
that
word.
In our
circle at work here?
Yeah, like
they,
my friends, my family, my coworkers, no one would say,
indeed. Every now and then someone says it, and I always applaud them because I go, good for you. You pulled that off. Couldn't pull it off.
Bangs. They don't like when we say bangs for the fringe of hair.
What did they say
I
in
don't
England?
Know.
I don't know if there must be an equivalent. There's people in England. Boris Johnson has bangs. What do they refer to that as?
What do they call bangs
in England?
In England. Fringe.
Fringe.
I don't like that. Sorry. Brits.
No, I wouldn't call it fringe. I'm not comfortable with fringe.
Oh yeah, it says bangs for fringe of the hair.
Yeah.
They don't like when we say take out rather than take away.
Right, it's takeaway in England. It is.
Like takeaway food?
Yeah, if you were ordering food at a restaurant to pick up and then bring with you, they always refer to it as takeaway, never take out or carry out.
I forgot you've been there.
I've been there. I've put my
Say
time.
Indeed, that would have worked perfectly there.
Try it again.
I can't believe I forgot you've been there.
I have been to England indeed. Did that work?
No.
That didn't work.
You stretched it out
I can't
too
do
much.
It. All right, more of these.
Yeah,
these
I have more.
This is the reason that British people don't like us because we're saying these phrases. What are they? More ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, several texts have come in about what we're talking about, and that's phrases we say and use here in the United States that the Brits are not happy with. Somebody said that, this is from 847, in England they call bangs the chicken sandwich. I don't think that's true.
What?
Pretty sure that's not true. A different 847 says that there is somebody here, Wendy, at WGN who says indeed quite often and pulls it off. Who would that be? Can you think of who that is?
John Williams.
It's not John Williams. Amy Guth.
Oh.
Amy says indeed quite often, and I always go, yeah, she can do that.
She can pull that off.
Yeah,
we cannot do that.
Right. Right.
We're going to take a call here. Arlene wants to talk to us. Is that good, Bill?
Yes, I want to talk to Arlene.
Hi, Arlene.
How are you?
Oh, my fault. Wrong
Every
button.
Day.
There you go.
Well, listen, I'm calling because of the word, like, good and well.
Yes.
So many people say, cool, how are you doing? I'm cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's brought that up, huh?
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Because we're not physically cool, especially
well,
not
I
this.
Am.
Well, you are, Wendy, but for the rest of us, no. So what should they say in its place, would you say?
Well, you should learn to say good or well. I do try to remember that.
I am well. I will say
you know,
that from now on.
But I'm cool. I'm doing fine.
Thanks,
I'm
Arlene.
I'm fine. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know.
That works.
Stuff
Thanks.
Like that.
Thank you, Arlene.
We appreciate you calling. I don't like that either. How's everything going? I'm cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Too street?
Yeah, but it sounds kind of funny to say I'm well. Like, it just sounds foreign to me. But it is proper English.
I think it is the right way to say it.
Here's another one. The Brits do not like Americanisms. And here's one. They don't like when we say a half hour instead of half an hour.
So we can't say a half hour anymore?
No, they want us to say, like, I'll meet you in half an hour.
Yeah.
As opposed to I'll meet you in a half hour.
No.
They don't like it.
That one's subtle. That one, I wouldn't get upset about that one. Would you? That one's not worth getting bothered over.
I don't really care about any of these too much.
Oh, really?
I mean, the Indeed, we don't... a heads up, for example, in a business meeting. Let's do a heads up on the issue. I've never been sure of the meaning. So the Brits don't like when we say a heads up.
Well, a heads up normally means advance notice. It doesn't mean...
give me a heads up and...
Maybe they're misunderstanding of what it means.
Maybe.
Do they not have that phrase in England?
I guess not.
No.
This one, I'm in agreement. I agree with the Brits on this one.
Yeah.
People that say my bad after a mistake.
Hate it.
Oh my God, I hate it. I never said that.
No.
Nor did you.
Stupid. It's really stupid.
My bad.
What does that imply exactly? I know it means I've made a mistake, but come on.
It's on me.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. I don't like it.
I mean, I can't really describe it other than it's stupid.
I used to play softball with a guy, and every time he made an error, which was a lot,
I knew you were going to say that.
It was a lot. He would always do that. That's what came next, is the ball trickled through his legs. My bad. No, the ball went through your legs. Say that.
My bad. The most annoying Americanism is a million and a half when it is clearly 1.5 million. They're bent on the numerical things that we say wrong.
That seems to be their biggest problem with us.
They don't like when we say, I'll reach out to... when the correct word is ask. For example, I'll reach out to Kevin and let you know if that timing is convenient.
Yeah.
Reach out? Is Kevin stuck in quicksand? Is he teetering on the edge of a cliff? Can we just ask him?
I'm okay with that one either way. Reach out seems like there's more effort being put forward to get to him, doesn't it? Because reach out, you picture somebody physically. It's like when politicians say, I will reach across the aisle. And you go, will you though?
Yeah,
will that really happen?
Not literally.
No.
Can I ask you a question about that word?
Yeah.
I'm really confused, and I'm not insulting anyone, and I'm not judging anyone,
mm-hmm.
but I don't use the word literally too frequently,
mm-hmm.
but when I do, I say it literally. But there are people who talk amongst us, just like you and me, mm-hmm. and they will say literally.
Yes. To dress it up a little, to put some lights on it. It's unnecessary. You don't
I don't understand
to.
It.
Right.
I could hear a British person, you know, someone with an accent saying, I literally do not know what you're saying.
Right.
But there are people who are
somebody
just talking like Chicago, like me.
Would say that.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
But we're just talking like this, and all of a sudden, I literally.
Yeah.
No, that's not how you say it.
It's
have
usually.
Have you noticed this
yeah,
lately?
Yeah.
It's unusual.
You're getting a bit of that, but then the other problem with it is people don't understand the meaning of it, which is. Without a doubt, this is true. This part's true. Everything else I've
literally,
said may not be true.
Word for
but
word.
This part is true because people still exaggerate when saying it.
I think someone you know does it.
One of my daughters does it all the time. Their house was literally 3 miles long. I don't know if it was. Was it? Was it? Was it?
Does she at least say literally as opposed to literally?
She doesn't.
When did that happen? Is that an actor thing?
I don't know. Well, I hope not, because everyone who says it is an actors. But I do, half the time when people say it, they do. They juice it up that way.
I've never noticed that except for maybe the past couple years. Mm. I'm hearing it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I literally hear it at least twice a day.
Yeah. I don't know why that came up. I'm baffled by it.
All right. Well, that's it.
Other than that, the Brits are okay with the way we're speaking.
Yeah, there are a ton more, but we don't have time. Maybe we could talk about it on the stream.
All right. You can
join us there. There's a phone number to call when we go to the bonus hour, WGN Extra, from noon to 1 today, 312-235-2525, 312-235-2525. Literally, make a note of it.
Yes. All right, more after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We need to get a new
one. Why?
That's a great theme
that song.
Song
says it all about it.
We always look at each other when that's playing like.
Well, really? Because it's all true. Everything in there
everything
is true
is
about
true.
You.
You don't get that in music very often.
Right.
I mean, it's absolutely
a lot
true.
Of music has serial filler, but not the Zorn song.
We could make our own version of it and no one would notice. We'll
you
just have
so?
A different thing.
Hey, mediocre father.
Neither one of us plays the lute.
I do.
Oh, you do play the lute.
I certainly play
the lute. I didn't know that.
I could certainly play
the lute. Eric Zorn is here, just like the song implied. Eric, this is very serious. There was a car theft in Lake County. A kid was shot, and you have some thoughts about this. What did you want to say?
Well, this is a very interesting story. There was a group of six kids from Chicago who had stolen an SUV, and they went up to this little town that no one's ever heard of called Old Mill Creek. It's up kind of near Gurney Mills.
Yeah.
A very rural town, and I haven't seen the layout of the place where this happened, but apparently they go into this guy's driveway, and he's got like an Audi, a 2011 Audi in his driveway, and they're scoping it out, maybe to break into it, maybe to steal it. It's unclear. They're like I said, there are six of them, and the homeowner, who's a 75-year-old man, comes out, and evidently, according to him, one of the kids, the 14-year-old kid named Jaquan Swopes, comes toward him, and the homeowner has a concealed carry license. He's a permitted gun owner, and he shoots his gun, hits the kid in the head, and kills him. The other kids grab the kid, put him into the SUV, drive off. Ultimately,
They
leave him at an accident scene, trying to get help for him, but he's apparently already dead. Anyway, there's a long chase. They catch the kids in Chicago, and they. A couple of things come up. First of all, the kids have been, the other five kids who are older than 14, I think they range from 16 to early 20s, have all been charged with murder. And there's a law in Illinois called felony murder. Felony murder says that if you're involved in a crime, and it has to be a crime, a felony, because it's not like shoplifting, but a crime, a serious crime, and somebody gets killed in the course of that crime, then you are guilty of murder. Now,
this is pretty new, right?
Well, the law goes back, and there's a law like this, a law similar to this in most states. I think it's 44 states, something like that. And the law makes some sense if Wendy and I decide to rob a convenience store, and we go in with our guns, and I end up shooting the clerk, then Wendy's just as guilty as I am. I mean, we've conspired to commit this act. The fact that somebody was killed was certainly foreseeable.
It's
a team effort.
Yeah.
It's even the case if Wendy's just driving the getaway car, and I go in, and Wendy's part of the plan. But what's happened is that this law has been used in peculiar ways. Number one is if your accomplice is killed. So if Wendy and I go in and I get shot and killed by the store owner who's got a gun, then Wendy is guilty of my murder.
What?
Yeah. See that, and that's
that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't to me either. It's a strange thing. And there have been cases where, and there was a case in Illinois. I have the notes here. It was in 2008, there was a 15-year-old kid named Justin Doyle, and he and two other teens broke into a house just outside of Rockford, and they weren't armed. And he was with two older acquaintances, and they planned this burglary, assuming no one was home. And it turned out that there was a house guest in the house who heard the kids there, woke up, and then they shot one of Doyle's friends, his best friend, actually, I think, killed him. And so Doyle, who's 15, was prosecuted for murder. He ended up being, his sentence was commuted not too long ago, a couple years ago. But the idea that, okay, you're going to burglarize a house, that's bad. That's a bad thing to do, to burglarize a house. You should be punished for that. But I don't think that in this case, when your friend is killed in the course of the commission of this crime, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that you would be prosecuted for murder.
Yeah.
What would you do to change it?
Well, first of all, I think I would say that if an innocent victim is killed in the commission of a crime, that changes
Yeah, your example, if we both go into burgle.
Yeah, and then also I would, the law, I think, ought to have some sort of a provision in it that would account for the seriousness and the risk of death in a case like this. Like, if you're planning a burglary, in this case, it looked like they were maybe planning a car theft or a car burglary, is it reasonable to assume that death might result from that? I would answer no. I would think that kind of a crime.
I would say yes.
A car burglar? A car theft?
Yeah, a lot of people have guns now.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, in that case, then just about any crime could result in death, right? But you know, we don't, when someone has a lot to drink and gets behind the wheel of a car, we don't charge them with first-degree murder, which is what felony murder is equivalent to if they kill somebody. I mean, maybe we should, because it's pretty obvious when you're drunk, you get behind the wheel, that is causing a great risk of death and bodily harm to you or somebody else. But
haven't there been instances where, in a situation like you just described, someone else connected with it, like a bartender or something, could also be charged as part of the death? Hasn't that happened?
Well, that has to do with like the dram shop laws and so on and so on. But there are also cases where someone will be involved in a crime, and then in fleeing from the police, they will strike a vehicle and kill somebody.
Right.
And in that case, of course, the person who's driving the car is guilty of murder, but the person who maybe helped him with a carjacking but wasn't involved in the car chase then gets charged.
Oh, they can separate it to that extent.
I guess I would argue that you could layer some common sense on top of this kind of
thing,
where you'd say, like, okay, was it reasonable to think in the case of a house burglary that someone's going to end up dead? You know, yeah, I mean, you could end up dead doing anything, right?
You're breaking into someone's house and thinking no one's home.
Someone could fall through the floorboards if they're having a construction project. I mean, it's one of those things where you know, but what's the intent? Is there any intent in that instance to kill somebody? I don't think so. In fact, these kids who broke into the house in Rockford weren't even armed. It's unclear, and this gets to the second part of this conversation, it's unclear what the victim had in his hand. The homeowner who fired the shot said that he saw something in the kid's hand, and apparently the police on the scene recovered a knife.
Oh.
Now, the other question is, how close was this kid? Because this gets into the whole thing that we got into a little bit with the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, which is, at what point are you justified in taking deadly force against someone who you think has it out for you? And in this case, it's unclear to me, and I haven't seen the reporting yet, and I've been looking into trying to find out how you're allowed to shoot somebody in Illinois if you're in fear of your life.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to shoot somebody.
Or bodily harm.
Or great bodily harm. I guess there's no real distinction at that point between bodily harm and great bodily harm. If you're afraid that the person, if you're in fear of someone who's going to attack you, and you really have no other recourse other than to shoot them, then okay, that's fine. And if that was the case here, if this guy was advancing on the homeowner quickly and the homeowner couldn't retreat into his home, he couldn't lock the door, he couldn't call 911, he couldn't wait till the guy, you know, I don't know. I don't know all the circumstances. My colleague Darlene Glanton has written a couple of interesting and very controversial columns on this very subject, talking about, you know, you got to look at what this homeowner did here too, which was, he justified in shooting this kid? He had a knife in his hand, but how close was he? We don't really know. And how much of a threat was he that was unavoidable? How much of an immediate threat to this man's life was he? Did the guy overreact? And then the question becomes, okay, so the guy overreacted. Let's you know, most of our conversations about this case so far about the felony murder law have assumed that the homeowner was justified. Say, okay, let's just say he's justified and go from there. Does it still make sense to charge these other kids with murder? Who are trying to
sure assume. Doesn't seem like it.
It seems like a bit much, doesn't it? I mean, certainly charge them with attempted car theft.
Yep.
I think they were actually in another stolen car, so charge them with car theft. But if you charge them with murder, you're talking about extended prison times for these guys for essentially what amounted to a car theft. But the question that, you know, beyond that, we've been assuming that he's justified, but what if he's not justified? What if this guy, homeowner, just comes out and shoots these kids or shoots this kid? Because he's walking toward him from 20 feet, 40 feet, 60 feet.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You can't just do that.
But keep in mind, this guy is also outnumbered by a ratio of 6-1. You've got six young guys.
And it's 1 in the morning. I certainly understand that he would be afraid. I certainly understand that he might...
Well, stay in your house and call 911.
Well, that would be my thought, too, that the thing to do... And this is why we have training. This is why when we give people concealed carry permits, we talk to them about what the law is. You can't just get mad at somebody and shoot them or say, hey, you're trying to break into my car.
Right.
Or you're walking toward me. That's you know, even though you're, you know, 30, 40 feet away, you just don't know. So, but let's assume that now. Let's turn this question inside out and say, let's assume.
But not yet. Don't do it yet.
Can I do it yet?
Not yet,
right
Eric.
Right now,
we will take a break
now.
And then you can turn that question inside
all
out.
Right.
Eric Zorn is here. Turner Inside Outer of Questions. We're at 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we're chatting with Eric Zorn about this case in
Old Mill Creek.
Six people turn out to be young teenagers, early 20s, come to this man's house looking to perhaps steal his Audi. The man comes outside with a gun, shoots one of the children dead, 14-year-old.
14-year-old kid is killed, yeah. And the question, and there's a bunch of different questions about this, and a lot of them have to do with this felony murder statute, which, and so the conversations that we've been having have generally tended to be framed around the idea of saying, okay, let's just assume that the homeowner was justified in shooting this 14-year-old kid who mm-hmm. he says was advancing on him, and he apparently had a knife in his hand. The question then, let's turn the question inside out and say, let's ask, well, what if the law determines that the homeowner was not justified, that the distance between himself and the kid was too great for him to say that his life was in immediate danger? Mm-hmm. And let's say that the law determines that it was not a justifiable homicide, but the shooting was unjustified. My understanding of the felony murder law is that it doesn't really matter to the guilt or innocence of these five men.
They still would get charged?
That's my understanding of the law, which is that they could still be charged with murder because the kid died, even though the shooting was unjustified, which is again, it sort of adds this layer of absurdity to this. But it's a really interesting conversation because it's one of these stories that kind of keeps coming up about the right you have to defend yourself and where it begins. And you know, when you're talking about a place like Old Mill Creek, it is extremely rural. I've been up there. It's sort of horse country up mm-hmm. there. It's not like there's a police department there that would be there in a minute or two. You'd have to call the Lake County Sheriff, and it would take time for them to get there. So I think a lot of people out there do have guns in their homes for just this kind of thing. If someone's trying to break into their house or someone is threatening them, and they can't, the police aren't going to be there right away. I have some sympathy for that. I live in the city. I'm about six blocks from the police station. I feel like the police would respond quickly. Don't have a gun in the house. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but I don't. But I can understand why people out there would. And
get it, too.
And I can imagine where the law might decide that this guy was not justified, but that we would, as just human beings, sort of understand that it's 1 a.m, you've got six guys you've never seen before out in front of your house casing your car, and one of them is walking toward you, whether he's 40 feet away, 60 feet away, or 10 feet away, you're pretty freaked out.
In your house.
Well, he should. I mean, I think the law would require him at least to try to retreat in a safe way, to go back into his house, lock the door, call 911. He's got a gun. Is that what you would think that he should have done? I think that the law might say yes. Let's wait till we get all the details from this case. But if we just assume that he wasn't justified, this incident really highlights the need to clarify and refine this felony murder statute that we have.
But you see why it's tough to do, though.
It is tough
because every circumstance is so dramatically different.
Well, you can imagine a situation where if five guys get together, six guys get together to steal a car, and they're standing around the car trying to break into it, and one of them takes a step back into the street and gets run over by a passing motorist. Are the five guys, six guys there who are trying to steal the car, are they guilty of murder?
Manslaughter might make more sense.
Even manslaughter? Are they guilty of anything other than trying
involuntary?
To steal the car? The guy took a step back. Now, is it reasonable to think you're standing in the street, someone would hit you? Yeah, that could happen. I mean, the thing is, what I'm saying is that when you play these scenarios out, you look at all the hypotheticals, you look at a situation where it's not always so obvious what the just thing to do, what the ethical thing, what the moral thing to do is. How culpable are these kids who are up there?
Don't do bad things.
Well, exactly. Well,
that's the reason these laws are in place, to say to anybody who are trying to form some sort of conspiracy to commit a crime,
right,
look at what the end result could
look
be.
Look at what might happen. Yeah. Right. No, I see that. On the other hand, I think there has to be some sort of sense of proportion in the law.
Our investigators still need to speak with what the
possibilities are. So, anyway, it's a fascinating subject.
Sure.
We talked about it a lot on the Mincing Rascals last week, and in the editorial board meetings this week, we've been talking about it quite a bit, because it's just one of those stories that brings up a lot of really sort of elemental feelings that people have, some really strong feelings people have about your right to defend yourself, and about, you know, there was a story that interviewed the mother of the boy who died. And she was saying, you know, why did you shoot? He was my baby. He was my baby. And I saw a lot of the response on social media to this was, hey, he's your baby. Then make sure he's not in a car with his buddies up in Lake County.
It was his cousins, and she dropped them off to hang with the cousins. The cousins have had priors.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're in the wrong situation. I can see it on the mother's side, too. But
I can see where the mother is upset by that. And I know that when kids are 14, it's easy to say, oh, it's easy to control a 14-year-old and what they are and to know where they are at all times. That's absolutely not realistic. You know, these kids were up to no good.
Yes, definitely.
Almost, there's no question about it. They were stolen a car up there. I think under normal circumstances, you might say, well, okay, charge these kids with burglary, auto theft, and it's a shame what happened.
That's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. Listen to him here on our show or on the Mincing Rascals podcasts, available now. Thanks, Eric.
Good to see
Coming
you
up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.